and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Pull up some dust and sit down.
And now, the host of the longest running fight show in radio and internet history.
I am deeply sorry for my irresponsible and selfish behavior I engaged in.
Pedro Fernandez.
My advice to you is to start drinking heavily.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios in San Francisco, California. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Often imitated, but never duplicated, 35, 36, no, make that 37 plus years now of knocking out all bums. Straight up, my name is Pedro Fernandez. Welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. For the next hour, we're talking boxing, of course, and MMA. In other words, combat sports, open phone lines around the planet. You can join us if you like, 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529, or the better, no commitment, guilt-free text line. Say what you want via text. 415-275-1613. Once again, the studio text line, 415-275-1613. Emmanuel Navarrete, the former WBO 122-pound champion, stepped up to 126 pounds, was the winner last night on ESPN. Close fight in the scorecards, not in reality. Straight up, he is now like 37-1. Good fighter, no doubt about that, but I think he made the jump too soon to 126 pounds. In other words, he should have established dominance at 122. When you leave a weight class, it's after you kicked everybody's ass. Well, he didn't kick everybody's ass at 122, and now he's fighting at 126, and he is the 126-pound WBO champion. We're celebrating the life today of Eddie Futch. Who was Eddie Futch? He was a trainer. Originally, of course, born, I think, in Mississippi, and made his way to Detroit, of course, at the age of five, but he became a world-class trainer. He was a fighter to an extent, but he was such a great guy. I remember one of the last times I saw him, I think it was his late 1989, and it was a little sad. He was in a wheelchair. Anyway, bottom line is Eddie Futch was the guy that saved Joe Frazier from Muhammad Ali when he was killing him there in the Thrill in Manila. Of course, that was back in 1975. Was that long ago? Good Lord. Anyway, bottom line is you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Boxing's PhD, Socrates Palmer, joins me after the break. This is Ring Talk.
Well, before you do anything rash, dig this.
Everybody plays a fool sometimes.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Hello, killer!
Some of the new Tower of Power 2020 version. Check them out, towerofpower.com. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it, your inside look into the world of boxing. Joe Joyce is going to get his just due November 25th, it looks like. He's going to hook it up with Danny Dubois. I'm hoping Double D just takes him out because Joe Joyce, Double D versus Double J. I'm hoping Double J gets knocked out because if ever was a heavyweight pretender from the UK, it is Joe Joyce. Last night, as I said, Emmanuel Navarrete, a winner, not all that impressive on my mind. Of course, as I said, the former 122-pound champion now fighting at 126 pounds. And, you know, what's wrong with boxing? Some people ask me, what's wrong with boxing? Looking at this result last night, super bantamweight Saul the Beast Sanchez, 14-1, 8 KOs. Destroyed Daniel L. Alzacon Lozano, 15-10. You didn't think he was going to destroy him for a vacant WBA title? You didn't think he was going to destroy him? Come on, 15-9 against a guy 14-1? That's what's wrong with boxing. At least we need the club shows to at least show, look like that on paper to the fan walking in that this fight's going to be competitive. If I was going to buy a ticket for that fight, obviously it wasn't in front of a live crowd, but if I had paid to buy a ticket for that fight, I'd have been ashamed because the bottom line is you don't want to see a guy that's 15-9 in the main event. Speaking of main events, let's take it, of course, to Brooklyn and bring in the man that dreads the loss of the Brooklyn Dodgers more than anybody else. I'm talking about Socrates Palmer Jr. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well. Unfortunately, the Brooklyn Dodgers are a little bit before my time, I guess it's an inside joke between us two because the New York Yankees have been eliminated from the playoffs, and I'm very happy because I'm a Red Sox fan living in the heart of Yankee land. I just did a little bit of trolling last night on Facebook, so that's what the audience is probably referring to.
Interesting.
So how you been, brother?
I'm fine, sir. What's on the mind of the box of boxing's PhD this week?
Well, what's on my mind is that one week away from the most anticipated fight of the year, in my opinion. Teofimo Lopez against Vasily Lomachenko. And, it's like a Christmas in October for those that celebrate it. I can't wait.
I concur, but, the odds are long still in Lomachenko's favor, although they're starting to come down a little bit. They're like about 3.5 to 4 to 1. Do you think those odds are a little long?
Do you think that it goes what?
Yeah, I said, do you think those odds are a little long, almost 4 to 1?
It's expected. I mean, outside of the hardcore boxing fan, no one knows who Lopez is. And Lomachenko, who is not a monster star outside of boxing, but he's the world champion, and he has been for a number of years. He's been considered, if not one or number two, the best fighters of, one or two of the best fighters in the world. And, he should be the considerable favorite. And, the odds are what are kind of just predicting where your money's going to go. And, so I'm not shocked. I will probably expect that the odds come down because, you make a pretty nice penny if Lopez, does what he's been forecasting the last almost 2 years. It's kind of crazy. I mean, he's been dogging Lomachenko for about 2 years and he's only has about 15 fights. So, mm-hmm. Let's see if his precociousness will,
here's where I'm trying to go with this. 3.5, 4 to 1 favorite. Liston was a 3 to 1 favorite over Ali, and they call that one of the greatest upsets of all time. I mean, would this be one of the greatest upsets of all time if Lomachenko was to get beat by an undefeated fighter?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's on that same, because I really believe Lopez is a live dog, and I'm sticking with Lopez. I think that it's time for a new era, and I'm picking Lopez to win. So if he won, I wouldn't be shocked. This is not Buster Douglas, Mike Tyson, or anything like that, or Lloyd Hunnigan beating Donald Curry. It's not. I don't think it's like that at all.
Today, I hate to interrupt you, but boxing's PhD Socrates Palmer is joining us from Brooklyn. In Brooklyn, the Bronx. The Bronx? Is it the Bronx? Let me get it right.
Yes, sir.
See, I mess my boroughs up often, and people stomp on me for it. I told some guy, I said, don't you live in Staten Island? And he was a black dude, and he looked at me like, are you out of your mind? I didn't know what he meant. Then I figured out what Staten Island was. Okay, what, are you out of your mind? I said, well, no, Teddy Atlas lives in Staten Island. I said, okay.
Yes.
Okay, I'll leave it at that. Boxing dates are changing, of course. Let's talk about Daniel Dubois. The undefeated lad and Joe Joyce, of course, both these guys from the UK. I'm hoping Joe Joyce finally gets his comeuppance, of course, when these guys hook it up in November. Is the fact that these live gates are not happening, is that getting these guys to come back to the table? Looks like Ryan Garcia is going to fight in November or December. So are these guys finally starting to realize that they can't get the super big money that they were getting and maybe they'll come around? Because Canelo's still the only one that's not playing ball.
Well, Canelo's probably one of the few fighters that can just sit and not work for a couple of years, and I'm sure he'll be okay. Someone like Ryan Garcia, unless he's getting a dollar for each Instagram follower, I'm sure his money's not long like Canelo. So I'm glad that, he's listening to reason and he's back in the ring. Is it concrete? Is it going to be him and Campbell officially?
It looks like him and Campbell are signed.
Okay, that's a good fight. It's a very good fight. It's going to be the litmus test for Ryan. He's fighting someone who gave Lomachenko a pretty good tussle, for a little while, and he's definitely far more experienced. He's faced the tougher fighters, so Ryan Garcia will be tested, and I'm happy to see that. Boxers need to be active, and more so now when everything is televised, it's or streamed, it's watchable,
Mm-hmm.
So it's a shame, that he was, negotiating himself into obscurity, you know, and it's not good for boxing. It's not good for his career. And I'm glad that they finally are, you know, seeing eye to eye, him and Golden Boy.
Okay, it's going to be some WBC Eliminator interim lightweight title for Ryan King Rye, calls him Garcia, of course, 22 years old, 20-0, 17 KOs. Luke Campbell, good fighter, no doubt about that. And of course, Teofimo took him out, right?
No.
Vasyl Lomachenko and Campbell went the distance.
Yes. Right. Yes, correct. Yes.
December 5th at a site to be determined. It'll be on the zone. Of course, I said 22 years old. He knocked out Fonseca, double left for us from Nicaragua in the first round. That left hook, who's got a left hook like that at 135 pounds? Who could crack like that with one shot? Bang.
Wow. I mean, at that weight class and his height definitely is a monster advantage. His you know, speed is, the punching power is the punch that you can't see. And Ryan Garcia has some of the fastest hands in the game. So, I don't think anyone right now, you know, has a left hook like him in the division. And he's got a lot of physical tools and advantages that other fighters don't have. Then again, you know, against limited opposition. You know, we're going to find out if that left hook meets its mark when he fights Campbell, who's a former Olympian and a pretty good, solid fighter.
Okay, here's what I'm going to predict right now. I'm going to go out on. I'm going to be real bold right now. I'm going to predict that Ryan Garcia is the next boxing superstar, and that he will take care of Mr. Campbell, and that he will fare well against any of the other lightweights. Hopefully, he and Gervonta Davis hook it up, because it looks like Davis is going to do his thing with Leo Santa Cruz, of course, and they're going to do this at 130 pounds. And Hector Martinez, Duran's former manager, weighed in and said, you know, you always call Davis a fat guy at 135. Will you say the same thing at 130? Well, it all depends on how he gets to 130. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, you were the first one to tell me that he looks like a dude that kills himself in the sauna to make that weight. You know, he's got a real chubby face. I saw that he received a little bit of fat shaming online when the fight poster came out with him and Santa Cruz. And I know a lot of these promo videos and pictures are done when guys are months, you know, just when the fight is started, it's signed, I mean. So he really looks like a fat dude.
Some of Duran's pictures were like, yikes, man, yikes. No, why did you take the picture of him? I mean, they got a picture of him down there in Panama over his restaurant, and it's a picture of him with a WBA 154-pound belt, but he's about 185, 190 pounds. You know what I'm saying? Of all the pictures you got to take of Roberto Duran and put on his restaurant in Panama City, you take a picture of him where you can stick a fork in him. He looks so fat.
He looks like a cruiserweight in that picture.
Yeah, that's the only weight. That's probably the only weight class he never fought in, cruiserweight. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. Your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. We're going to celebrate some birthdays a little bit later in today's show. Of course, Eddie Futch passing away on this day, October 10, 2001. He was one of my mentors, and I'll never forget the last time I really saw him in public. We were in outside of Las Vegas, and he said to him, I saw him in a wheelchair. I said to him, Godfather, are you okay? He goes, physically, yes. He goes, and he grabs my hand. He pulls me close to him. He goes, but mentally, I'm starting to slip. And that really hurt my feelings. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Remembering the great Eddie Futch on Sports Byline.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
The thing is that I'm still in his brain. I'm still in his mind. I'm the guy that he wants to get rid of.
Birthdays. My mother was born October 7th. My Auntie Julie was born October the 10th. We celebrate both their birthdays today. I miss them both dearly, and I often get wet eyes thinking about them both. You are tuned to Ring. And hey, don't believe the hype. After your mother dies, it don't get no easier. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. We, of course, we're coming to you from the West Coast. We take it to the East Coast, of course, to the Bronx. We're bringing the Bronx Bomber himself, talking about Socrates Palmer. Sock Halloween looks pretty good if you're not trick-or-treating, because on the 31st, we've got Showtime pay-per-view, Gervonta Davis and Leo Santa Cruz. on October 31st. Mm-hmm. Again, the same day, we have Naneo Inouye versus Jason Maloney for the WBA and IBF 118-pound belts on ESPN. And then on the Zone, we've got Oleg Usyk versus Derek Chisora in a heavyweight bout. Now, why did the fools that doing this pay-per-view October 31st, why would Al Haymon move that to a date where there's already two free boxing cards on?
Wow, that's a great question. I mean, they're fighting in, are they going to have a live gate at that?
It really doesn't matter if they're going to have a live gate. I don't think they are, but it doesn't really matter if they're going to have a live gate at this point in time. The money's with the pay-per-view. Okay. And if you're going to put, you're switching your fight from the 24th of the month to the 31st of the month, which is a week later, and okay, you have the right to change the date if you want, but to go against two free cards on the same day, to me, seems like pay-per-view suicide. But then again, the Charlo brothers, Charlomania, did 100,000 homes, or around 100,000 homes, a couple of weeks ago at $80 a pop. That's, you know, that's a decent amount of money.
They did that much? Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, it's still on the low end, but probably what you expected. I believe Deontay Wilder, when he fought the Cuban, the second time on pay-per-view, did, I think, under 200. So, yeah. That's, you know, kudos to them. You know, it stinks for the fight fan because, you know, you're having to bounce back and forth. You know, and the boxing audience is one audience. You know, it's not like, the NBA or the NFL. You know, it's one audience. You know, there's one fight and, it would have been great for something to happen tonight. Like, there's nothing going on tonight, but, you know, greed and stuff dictates dates. And I guess it's also a way for them to measure who is the bigger draw, who's the, you know, I don't know. I really don't. It's always bothered me.
If you've only got six people to draw from, we'll just say I'm using that number. Mm-hmm. If you only got six people to draw from, okay, and you're throwing three different plates of food at them, and they're all three of them are hungry, they're going to be switching from plate to plate to plate. You're not going to get to total. Nobody's going to eat the whole plate.
It's a great, great way to look at it. Yeah, you're right. It's a disservice for the fighters also. There's, you know, the spotlight, you figure, should be on them and the fans. You know, I don't know. It's always kind of ticked me off, but, okay. You know, can you do? We'll find a way to watch them, I'm sure.
Yeah, and you know, not everybody has a, you know, with today's world, not everybody has a DVR anymore. I mean, not everybody else. Some guy said to me, I said, why don't you DVR that? He goes, I don't have one. I go, I don't either. So I think he's got a point. Danny Garcia and Errol Spence. Of course, Errol Spence, the car wreck waiting to happen, I think. Of course, now they're going to go December the 5th. It looks like it's going to go in Dallas, probably at the Dallas Cowboys Stadium. I guess they can pull the roof up and close it because it's going to be cold in December in Dallas, but they're going to do this in front of live crowds. I'm still freaking out over the virus out here. The president got the virus. I don't know how he evidently kicked it in a week or whatever he did. But the bottom line is I don't want to get it, and I really don't feel like going to a live arena and sitting next to people. Right? Not at this point. Not right now.
Yeah, I mean, Texas is having, you know, open crowds. I believe Florida as well. Is it that serious that you want to go in person to see something? You know, listen, people are going to do whatever they feel is best for them to do. You know, I'd like to focus on the fight itself. Is Danny Garcia going to go for the brass ring? You know, I mean, so many times we've seen Danny Garcia kind of just be content to leave it up to the judges, just kind of play safe. I mean, this is a guy, like you said, the car wreck waiting to happen. You don't believe that Errol Spence is the same fighter. I certainly don't. I would love to see an aggressive Danny Garcia take it to Errol Spence and see how Errol Spence reacts when he gets hit by a glove instead of, you know, his head hitting the windshield.
You know, I would step on his foot, hit him in the arms. I would do all kinds of, just try to discombobulate him and make, you know, and then crack him and maybe inside, you know, throw a forearm at times. You gotta make this dirty with Spence. You gotta take Spence back to that date in 2019 when he almost died. You've gotta take him back there. Cause when he sees those lights and sees that buzz once again and he gets clipped, I think he's gonna say, you know what? I'm just gonna take my money and go. I'm not trying to say Danny Garcia is the guy to do it. But Scott Cuddy would be if I get Scott down to 147.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to. I mean, Errol Spence is going to have to prove a lot of people wrong. You know, I'm certainly one of the doubters. Kudos to him. He's fighting, you know, a live name, you know. It is a dangerous fight. I mean, Danny Garcia can punch. You know, he's a former world champion. You know, he's shown moments that you really say, wow, you know, like when he stopped Amir Khan. But his career, instead of going into, like, that next superstardom, kind of, like, took a sideways step, you know, losing the guys like Sean Porter, who I think he's got more ability to but he just maybe didn't have what it's inside, you know, the ticker, you know, to really be a great, great all-time fighter, you know, but he'll have his moment.
Okay. Well, I haven't heard much about the internet champion lately. You know who he is, Derek Haney? I haven't heard much about Derek Haney lately. Of course, the kid originally from San Francisco, now fighting out of Las Vegas. According to Ryan Garcia, in fact, Ryan gave him a belt, didn't he?
I think it was Teofimo that gave him that belt. I think he gave him that monster. Yeah. Well, Devin right now is looking for a dance partner. All the other names, you know, they have people in front of them. You know, Lopez obviously has the biggest date of them all. Ryan has a fight. Javante Davis has a fight. You know, Devin needs an opponent. It's going to be interesting to see, if they're able to make the fight against him and Gamboa. I mean, Gamboa actually showed me something, you know, that he went the distance with Javante Davis. So maybe he still has something left in the tank, but.
He's old. That Cuban is old, man. I mean, he's old like Kid Gavilan old.
Aren't they all? I mean.
All right. No. Here's what's up. Here's a theory regarding Cuban fighters. Having worked with some Cuban fighters in Miami, in fact, I was running with them in the morning. I used to smell the booze on their breath in the morning. Anyway, stuff like that. They all lie about their age. They can get away with it. So you see these guys that look like they're shaving and they're like in the seventh grade. Something's wrong when they come over. Of course, talk about Cuban exiles. Most of the fighters that I've come in contact with have fibbed about their age. And I think that Joel Casamayor, the 1992 Olympic gold medalist, I think he was 99 going on 110 when he won the gold medal.
And it's funny you mentioned El Cepillo. I saw that his name was on the ballot for Hall of Fame. In your eyes, do you think he's a Hall of Fame fighter?
That's another conversation for another day. Wait, we're talking, babe, somebody just shot me a quick text here. Pay-per-view, Danny Garcia and Errol Spence. And Larry and I pick up on this all the time, but the term pay-per-view used to mean something. I mean, you know, when we paid out extra bucks to watch something, it was because we were watching the premium, watching something special. I mean, like the Charlo brothers a couple weeks ago, it was a 5.5-hour broadcast. What did they bring me in 5.5 hours that was worth 80 bucks?
You're right. You're absolutely right. Pay-per-view has been kind of bastardized. You know, pay-per-view was supposed to be, you know, for the marquee fighters, you know, the Tyson and Oscar and, you know, that era, you know, Evander Holyfield, you know, even, I mean, let's keep it real. Floyd became a pay-per-view draw first being on the B side. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't a pay-per-view guy until he fought Arturo Gatti. You know, it's not what it used to be. At one point, I figured with Canelo signing that deal with DAZN, I thought we would never hear those words, those letters, pay-per-view.
Well, you know, let me say this. Pay-per-view is cool. You know why? If you pay me to view it, I'm down with that. Okay? Pay-per-view. Switch it around. Give me 80 bucks to watch the Charlo brothers, and I'll watch them, and I'll get off on it. But I'm not paying 80 bucks to watch the Charlo brothers ever.
And you know what? And you shouldn't. Unless you're fighting Canelo.
Exactly. Sox, say hello to the family and the agent. I love you. We'll talk soon.
All right, my brother. Thank you again.
The Bronx Bomber, folks, not the Brooklyn Bomber, the Bronx Bomber himself, Socrates Palmer, appearing exclusively on Ring Talk Live Worldwide only, a Sports Byline production. We're talking MMA and boxing after the break.
I thank y'all for tuning in. All the fans around the world, we love y'all.
Love the way you turn me on. You got the right stuff, baby.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Bruce was 32 years old. Let me explain something about his death, too, because there's, I guess, so many rumors that are going about how he passed away and so forth, about a touch of death and drugs and so forth. And so I'd like to clarify that before we go on with the demonstration. Is Bruce, in 1968, he's pretty heavy in the weightlifting, as you could tell. He was very well built. And he was lifting weights one night with Kareem Jabbar, who was a student of his when he was in Los Angeles, playing at UCLA. And he tried to lift too heavy weights, and he ruptured the disc in his back, and he was laid up in the hospital for 3 weeks. In fact, the doctor said that they didn't know if he'd be able to walk again or not. But, of course, with a person like Bruce, who's got the drive and determination to achieve anything in life, he was up in about a month, and within 3 months, he was as strong as he ever was. But he had constant back pains from that day on, and he was having to take medication to keep the muscles in the back loose and relaxed. So what happened is that when he was in Hong Kong preparing for his next movie, he was working with a girl named Betty, and who was going to co-star with him, and he got a severe headache. So Betty gave him some antibiotics for the headache, and with the medication he had taken for his back and the medication he had taken for his headache, they reacted to each other and made his brain swell up, and it created an aneurysm or ruptured blood cells in his brain, and that's actually what happened. So if anyone asks you what happened, then you can tell them the true story.
The great Chuck Norris on the passing of Bruce Lee, and I ran that again because somebody said to me, no, Bruce Lee died. Chuck tells you his story. Of course, he was Bruce Lee's buddy. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Little Lenny Williams bring me back from the break. I'll never forget embarrassing myself in front of those people over there at Kimball's East when Lenny stuck the mic on my face and I had a few drinks. Bottom line is, there were only a few people in there that night that I know, so hopefully you guys won't hold it against me forever. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look in the world of boxing and MMA. Holly Holm, of course, the preacher's daughter, young lady now 38 years old, of course, coming to us from Albuquerque, New Mexico, the former world boxing champion in a couple different weight divisions. I mean, she was the real deal. I televised her fights and was her ring announcer and did all kinds of things down there in Albuquerque, New Mexico when she was boxing for promoter Lenny Frescas and Frescas Productions. Of course, now she's the MMA star, having beat Ronda Rousey. And, of course, they trained diligently to beat Ronda Rousey. They lost the next fight to Misha Tate, a fight they probably shouldn't have took. They should have waited for the Ronda Rousey rematch. Anyway, bottom line is they took the fight with Misha Tate. They lost, and Holly Holm's been scratching her way back since. Last Saturday night, she beat Iran Aldana. She was a slight favorite, although a lot of people on the inside thought that maybe that was a good bet, betting on Aldana as the underdog here. But the bottom line is, at the end of the night, Holly Holm won going away. 50-44, 50-45, and 50-45. Each round is scored 10-9, usually. One round was scored 10-8 on one judge's scorecard, thus the 50-44 scorecard. But the bottom line is, she was dominant for five rounds. This is the preacher's daughter.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, after five rounds of action, we go to the judges' scorecards. Here are the totals. 50-44, 50-45, and 50-45. All for your winner by unanimous decision, the preacher's daughter, Holly Holm!
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here with your winner, Holly Holm. Holly, that was a dominant performance, but you had to work hard to stay away from her. What was the game plan coming in?
Oh, you know, she's a mover, just like me. So I just had to think about what I gotta do to box if I was fighting myself a little bit, you know? And really I have nothing to do with this. My coach is telling me what to do. It all comes down, I've said every fight, if I've ever lost, it's not because of the coaching, it's because of my performance. So, tonight we just kind of put the game plan together and was able to be victorious.
And that was the game plan. Were there any variables, anything that surprised you about her?
Well, we have a game plan for if it's here, do this, if it's here, do that, if it's here, do this. So there's some things that I need to work on, obviously, but I always say I like to learn from my wins and not from my losses because I learn each time. So
the goal is obviously to get back to the belt. You want that gold around your waist. What do you need to do to get there?
Just keep working hard like I am. You know, when I first came into MMA, it was kind of like, you know, watch out for her boxing. And then when I started throwing the kicks in their faces, they're like, watch out for her kicks. And then I start, you know, watch out for her clinch or, you know, my wrestling. So when I came over to MMA, I didn't come to be a boxer in an MMA cage, you know, in an octagon. I came to be a mixed martial artist, and it's taken time. I didn't start any grappling until like 4 weeks before my first fight in MMA. So I'm still very green. I'm learning, so I just want to put it all together.
And have you got anybody in mind? Is there one person that you think could get you a title shot, or is it straight to the belt for you?
I like to just let the future fold out, you know. I have a great team around me that worries about that, and I just train.
Congratulations on an excellent win.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you to everyone at home. I know everybody always says that, but we couldn't be here without all your love and support. Love you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, the preacher's daughter, Holly Holm.
Of course, Irene Aldana in the opposite side of the octagon dropped to 12 and 6. Bottom line is Aldana was a hot fighter coming in, had a mean left hook. I mean a Mexican left hook. She threw it sort of like Pepino Cuevas. Wasn't the most polished thing, but if it hit you, you were going to sleep. But you know, if you don't hit somebody, your power doesn't mean anything. Muhammad Ali and George Foreman. If you can't hit what you're trying to punch, it doesn't work. Bottom line is, Aldana tried. She lost going away. The rest of the fight card absolutely sucked. I mean, the entire card was just pathetic as far as the UFC was concerned, except for one other fight, a women's bantamweight fight. Jermaine Durandamy, of course, a girl that didn't want to fight Chris Cyborg Santos. She decided she would pull out of 145-pound featherweight title fight in order to, like, she was talking about retiring. I mean, she didn't want to fight Chris Cyborg Santos. Of course, Cyborg Santos went on to lose to Amanda Nunes. Anyway, bottom line is she defeated Julia Pena with a submission in the third round guillotine choke. Outside of that, the rest of the card sort of sucked. The future of the UFC as far as the rest of the year is concerned, of course, man, ain't a whole lot on, you know, I mean, Khabib's going to come back against Justin Gaethje October 24th. They're probably going to do that in Dubai. They are going to do that in Dubai. Of course, the Korean Zombie and Brian Ortega is going to take place next week, October 18th. And that's a fight in which really petrifies me. And the reason why it petrifies me is that, scares me, is that Brian Ortega was, he was the Oscar De La Hoya of MMA. He was pretty. He could talk Spanish, English. He had it all, okay? And I think that they ruined him when they put him in that fight with Max Holloway. Not that they ruined him putting him in the fight, but they ruined him by letting the fight continue. I'm talking about his corner. I mean, he was beaten after the second round. I mean, you talk about a guy that he probably got beaten 10 times in that fight. In other words, if you know, one beating's enough, right? But he probably took 10 beatings in that fight because they just let it go and let it go and let it go and let it go. And I was grimacing. I was watching this go on. I'm watching, you know, a guy get destroyed. And in the world of the UFC, they don't throw in towels. They just don't do it. When I work corners, man, of course, the Golden Gloves and amateur fights and this and that. But when I work corners, I wasn't Jerry Tarkanian, like having with the college football, basketball coach with the towel in my mouth. But I always had a towel in my hand to throw it in case the referee didn't see something and maybe one of my kids was hurt. Cause, you know, listen, they're not here fighting for world championships. You know, no. They're not here to get hurt. This is amateur boxing. Anyway, bottom line is I always thought the towel was prevalent and that you always should have had it in the corner, but nobody is thrown. I've never seen a towel thrown in the UFC. And all the beatings I've seen in that stuff, I've never seen anybody throwing a towel. The Brian Ortega fight, I think, was stopped by a doctor, but man, they should have stopped that fight maybe two rounds sooner. Anyway, October 18th, the Flash Forum in Dubai, the Korean Zombie versus Brian Ortega. I hope Brian still got something left because he just doesn't look like the same guy. He sort of looks like, I don't want to use that mongoloid term, but it just something's changed in his facial structure. He's just changed. His eyes don't look the same anymore, you know, and I'll get to that in a minute about guys not looking the same when I do some boxing history. Anyway, Khabib and Justin Gaethje go October 24th. Of course, that's going to be in Dubai as well. Of course, they come back to Vegas. They've got a few dates in Vegas. They haven't got any big fights set up as of yet. John Jones is talking about wanting to fight the guy that's a middleweight champion. Of course, John Jones, the ex-light heavyweight title holder, 205 pounds, didn't want to fight with Dominic Reyes again, which was a little bit silly because Dominic Reyes had given him a bad time in his recent fight, didn't want to do a rematch. So instead he advocated that gave up the title. He said he's going to move up to heavyweight. Now he wants to fight the middleweight champion, Israel Adesanya, of course, at 185 pounds. That's his weight. Bottom line is John Jones, a rudderless ship right now in the world of MMA. Now, I just heard that Teddy Atlas is training Francis Ngannou. Wow. Nothing could be better for Francis Ngannou. I'm not the biggest Teddy Atlas fan in the world, but Teddy knows boxing ABC and D and E and F. And the bottom line is he's talented. I mean, as a trainer, there's no doubt about it. Good motivationist in the corner. I remember the Michael Moore fight and things like that. So, I mean, he's got it all down. Of course, a bit of an ego too. We all do. But the bottom line is now he's training Francis Ngannou. Ngannou, of course, thrice beaten, USC heavyweight. I think he lost a fight early on, then he lost to Derek Lewis, and then he lost that title fight, of course, in the prior to the Lewis fight to Stipe Miocic. Of course, he had Miocic all but out in the first round, but couldn't deal with the five-round distance and the fact that they went down on the ground. Once he got on the ground, he was out of his element. Now, with Teddy Atlas teaching him how to stand up box. I mean, the guy had a decent record as a boxer. I think he was stopped once as a professional boxer, but he had a decent record coming out of Boston, out of Paris, France. So what I'm trying to say is, I think this guy, I'm saying it right now, I think Francis Ngannou has a chance to beat every heavyweight in the world in boxing. I think if he hits them, it's all over. The guy hits too hard. I know he's punching people with 4-ounce gloves, and when they step it up to heavyweight, he'll probably be punching people with 8-ounce gloves as far as heavyweight boxing center, 10-ounce gloves. But I think even with that additional weight, I think he punches so hard. He punches harder than Ernie Shavers. And how hard did Ernie Shavers punch? Larry Holmes put it to me like this. Have you ever been knocked down by a punch you didn't see, Pedro? I said, no, Larry. Same with me, except the time Ernie Shavers hit me. I saw the punch coming. I saw it coming, and I said to myself, oh, boy, here comes a punch. You sort of like you mentally prepare yourself and physically prepare yourself to taking this punch, and somehow you could take it. But that's how hard Shavers punched that Holmes couldn't take it. At the end of the day, I think that Francis Ngannou is a super athlete, and he might be able to take over both the world of boxing and the world of UFC. In fact, you know, as far as UFC is concerned, wasn't too pleased with that card last week. They didn't give out any fight of the night performances or anything like that. I think they gave away some $50,000 bonuses. But at the end of the night, Dana White's still the pimp that he is, giving away at the most. He's willing to cop to 18 cents on the dollar to talent. Think about that. You're working for somebody or you're working for a company. They bring in a dollar and they pay you maybe 12 cents. Well, you're their big star. You're what keeps the company going. And they're going to give you 12 cents out of a dollar. In other words, they're going to keep 88 cents for administration and for ownership, you know, stock chips and all that kind of good stuff. At the end of the day, when the UFC sold for $4.2 billion, it was the biggest ripoff in the history of sports. I think it was. I mean, $4,200 million? Come on. And they got guys going tonight. Get this. Talk about a B card, October 11th. Of course, it's coming to us from Dubai. It'll be here on tonight, October the 10th, as far as I think ESPN's concerned. But you got a name, Marlon Moraes, and the main event against Corey Sandhagen. Edson Barbosa, a wash-up, if there was one, from a couple of years ago, taking on Makai Amakani. Bottom line is Ben Rothwell, an old veteran heavyweight on the card. I mean, there's nothing really big on this card. In other words, it's a whole lot of nobodies. And that's what the UFC's gotten to be, a whole lot of nobodies. $4.2 billion. You got taken, no doubt about that. Let's talk boxing history. Of course, today, October 10th in boxing history, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, it was the day that Eddie Futch, the great Eddie Futch, left us, and I'll never forget Eddie. Of course, I was at his funeral with, Barry Gordy, of course, the founder of Motown Records. I got to spend some time with him. Of course, he was trained by Eddie Futch at one point in time. In fact, I think Gordy went like 13-4 or 13-2 with 4 or 5 knockouts. He couldn't punch much as a bantamweight. Speaking of bantamweights, I still mention Manuel Stewart. Of course, he was the best bantamweight ever to come out of the city of Detroit. 1964 amateur NAAU Golden Gloves champion. I miss you, Emmanuel, the Goldfather. In Paris, France, 1987 on this date, October the 10th, lightweight king Jose Luis Ramirez, who I got to spar a couple of rounds with in San Jose when I was a kid. I think I'm a kid now. But KO5, Cornelius Bose Edwards. Edwards wasn't in that fight at all. Of course, he was 130, moving up to 135 pounds. And when I sparred with Ramirez, I didn't know he was Ramirez. Didn't know who it was until it was over. He was a left-hander. He was tall. He was lean. And I don't remember a whole lot about it other than we went 6 minutes. Paris, France, 1998, Sean Bay Mitchell beats a guy by the name of Khalid Rahil, wins the WBA junior welterweight title. And that same venue, a guy from across the pond, James Page from Concord, California, KO2 Andrei Pestrov. Of course, that was for the WBA welterweight title. And get this. This is how stupid he was, how stupid his parents were. His mother was, who she was his manager, Mrs. Page. She calls me on the phone and she says, you know, I've been offered a title fight at 154 with Felix Trinidad for like $1.5 million. And I said, yeah, take it. She goes, yeah, but Don King's going to take this and take that. And all I'm going to get is $700,000 after it's all broken up. I said, well, Carl King's got his manager's cut, the trainer's cut. I said, $700,000, that's still like $500,000 more than you make fighting anybody else. And you get to keep your title at 147 because you'll be fighting the Trinidad at 154. Well, the mother didn't go with me. And the mother bucked a trend, okay? She didn't buy. I told her, please, please, you're going to ruin this kid's career. She didn't listen to me. She went the other way. They took a fight with a guy named Six Heads Lewis. And they got knocked out real quick for 150 grand. Bottom line is, 700 grand, you still would have had your title. You could have went back to 147. Dumb move, Mrs. Page. I don't think she's like a Mama Charlo. She isn't that close to her kids, but man, she was bad for James Page's career. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. History brought to you by, of course, historian Bill O'Neill.
Small town. My job is a small town. Provides me love.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Playing some happy music because I went to a virtual funeral yesterday. Stockholm, Sweden. A friend of mine passed away. COVID. That's the way it goes. 52 years old. It is what it is, according to the president. Yeah, well, I feel pretty bad. Anyway, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing, MMA. Of course, tomorrow, the Sunday edition comes to you at 11 a.m. Pacific time. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, and Twitch.tv if Cuddy can fix his channel. Evidently, the Twitch.tv thing is working, but the audio is not going across. And anyway, but sorry about that, but we'll fix that up. Of course, that'll be tomorrow. But tomorrow, Larry Merchant will be here, and I have got a special guest for hour number two, and I will sort of surprise it with you tomorrow when Ring Talk airs live at 11 a.m. Pacific time right here on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. Don't forget, Ring Talk Live Worldwide 24-7. You always catch our podcast at anchor.com. Just look for Ring Talk Live Worldwide at anchor.com. Of course, our podcast 24-7. Check them out. Commercial-free as well. You are tuned to the longest-running fight show in history, Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You know, there's a thousand things, a million things you can be doing right now. The fact you listen to the show, well, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. My buddy Lenny Williams to the break. My producer is the great Scott Cuddy. Until Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific time, this has been the Saturday edition of Ring Talk Live Worldwide.